Okay, we should be good.
Okay.
So the first question I want to ask is, what school did you teach at?
So we're talking mostly about the Huntsville schools, or are we talking about schools in general?
I believe the Huntsville schools. I think my main focus right now is talking about underfunded schools and how teachers felt the experiences that were felt there versus, like, I think the experience is very different from Madison City schools, so it's something that I don't really know much about. So, yeah, but if you want to speak broadly, that's okay, but if you would also just like to speak about Huntsville, that's okay, too.
Okay. Well, I taught at Rolling Hills Elementary. I was there for 1 year. I would have stayed. I really loved my kids. I loved the people that I worked with. But we moved to Georgia to be close to my parents. My father passed away this summer, so I'm now here with Mom. But there is definitely a difference. Before I went back to school to become a teacher, I was a stay-at-home mom, and I did a lot of volunteering in Madison City schools. And it's easy to see when you're in the school, the differences for kind of the kids that have and that have not in terms of what their socioeconomic background is.
Mm-hmm.
There is funding for the higher poverty schools. Rolling Hills is a Title I school, which means that a certain percentage of the students fall under the poverty line. And it means that there's money that's allocated from the federal government to help the school. But that doesn't bridge the gap between more affluent schools and middle-class or upper-middle-class schools in terms of what you can raise in PTA. One of the misnomers is that poor schools have families that are not hardworking. One thing I did find is that though I was at a school that didn't have a lot of money, these families were some of the hardest working families I know. They were working multiple jobs at minimum wage, but with a large family, not able to make ends meet. So, of course, there's not extra money to get to a PTA or to fund a new playground or redo a library or all the things that you can count on from a PTA in a more affluent area.
So how does this funding affect you as a teacher? How does it affect the way you teach these children versus if you were in, you know, a more funded, people who have more stable home lives and things like that?
When I was at Rolling Hills, the kids, because we were in Huntsville City Schools, we had a one-to-one technology initiative, which was great because each child had access to a computer. The problem came when the kids couldn't charge their computers at home because they didn't have power at home, because something had been turned off or because they were currently homeless and, like, going from place to place. But because we had the one-to-one initiative, we didn't have a lot of photocopies and a lot of things that you could make paper versions for. So when the technology worked, it was great, but otherwise it was coming out of our money for ink or for paper or copies and things, and that gets expensive. When you think about back to school and you think about those lists that come out and everybody brings in the glue sticks and the scissors and the paper and pens and things, the dry erase markers. Well, parents who are living hand to mouth, they don't have money for Expo markers. So instead of having a supply closet full of supplies, teachers buy the supplies themselves, and they'll buy the supplies that the kids need in order to be successful. And they'll buy snacks so that their kids won't be hungry, because you can't learn if you're hungry. And you just meet your kids' needs. I know people have bought clothing and shoes, and you take care of your kids. So in more well-funded areas, there's a surplus, and you get to have a spending stipend where you can pick out extra things, and then you can go the extra mile of having paints and Play-Doh and, you know, the things that make things fun, make learning fun. All that, all my school library, all of my books and things I purchased that I either bought from home, they were my kids' books, or thrift stores, you can get really good deals. And Asbury Thrift Store in particular was very supportive of me as a teacher, giving me materials to help support my classroom. So people do understand that it's a hardship, that you just do what you've got to do so that you can make school a great place for kids to be.
Mm-hmm. So how would you say charter schools have changed the public school system?
I think that the idea of charter schools is a positive one. I think that it can do a lot of great things. But I think what is actually happening is that there is less accountability held for the charter schools than there is for the public schools. And the money that goes per student towards the public school, like I was talking about that Title I money, the things that help to make it equal, that follows the student. So that money then goes to a charter school where they don't have to meet certain test score standards. They don't have to show that they are teaching all of these different standards. And in some cases that's a positive thing, because we can kind of test the kids to death, you know. It gives more opportunity for learning. But in other ways, it is negative, because the kids who are at the lower performing schools and have a school choice to go to a charter school, but they have to get transportation to these schools, it limits them. They're not able to go to the school of choice because they don't have transportation to get to another school farther away. They may not have a car at home. They may have parents who are sharing one car and working one night shift, one day shift, you know. And that isn't something that is feasible for them. So it takes the money away from a school that's already struggling, and it basically builds up the gap between the haves and the have-nots, because the kids whose parents have money and have transportation, or a stay-at-home parent who can carpool, those are the same parents that would be paying to the PTA and using the fancier charter schools.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I just feel like while the things that I like about charter schools, I wish we could bring to the public schools. I wish that there were more magnets that drew kids to the schools that were struggling, so that the money that goes to the PTAs and the programs could help build up an entire school and make all the schools be where families want their kids to be.
Yeah. So bringing it back to, the whole education secretary thing, so how should politicians, what should politicians keep in mind when addressing public education, excuse me?
I'm sorry, my daughter just walked by. Could you say your question one more time?
Yeah, totally. So what should politicians keep in mind when addressing public education?
I'm so glad someone asked a teacher that. I think that politicians should keep educators in mind, that educators have years and years of training and education in developmentally appropriate practices and how the brain develops and children learn. And our system is broken right now, and I'm not saying that educators know how to fix it, but the focus needs to be child-centered and student-centered and focused on how to help every student succeed, whether they have a learning disability, whether they are living in poverty, whether they are gifted and they need to be challenged and enriched. Government needs to, and politicians need to be aware of how learning happens and how I can't say it in a profound way, but I'm like, this is my moment and I'm blowing it. They need to talk with people who know how kids learn. A lot of times they set standards that are not developmentally appropriate, and we're pushing things younger and younger and younger so that we can try to compete internationally. But when you look at what is successful internationally, you see that they're using practices that are developmentally appropriate. They're involving movement and exploration and letting kids really be kids. And if we're going to have these rigorous standards, and we need to have something that provides pre-K before kindergarten, because first grade is now more like second grade, and kindergarten is like first grade. So you really need that early childhood, and we don't have access to that. That's another difference between the low income versus the middle and affluent schools. The kids who go to schools like Rolling Hills and like the school where I work now, they don't have the money to do preschool. So they're coming in already behind. And so just making it a level playing field so that all students have the ability to succeed, I think would help.
Yes. Wow.
And keeping the way children learn in mind. I also don't think that teacher performance should be tied to test scores. I think test scores play an important part because there has to be some accountability. But I think that people are turned off. We have a shortage of teachers right now because people don't want to sign up to teach to the test or be told that they're ineffective because a child has not succeeded on some national test that may or may not be developmentally appropriate for that child to be taking.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So that's what I would tell a politician.
This is a little bit off the record, but my sister, she's a teacher, And it took some hefty convincing of my parents to let her become a teacher because they did not like it at all. to have a job.
But I bet she teaches because that's what she is meant to do. I bet it's her calling.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And what makes me really sad is that people are turning away from a really admirable career because they can't support a family, because they are disrespected in the community and by politicians. Unless, you know, they get kind of scapegoated in a lot of ways. But I feel like all of us in public schools have to jump through a lot of hoops to become, quote unquote, highly qualified. And so I would like anyone who is making decisions about the education process in our country to also have to jump through that hoop and be highly qualified to make those choices.
So how does this issue of, you know, the whole education secretary nomination, how does this issue transcend party lines and transcend who you voted for? How does this affect everyone?
Well, it affects everyone because whatever your beliefs, the way that we take care of our children today is going to impact how they are able to be successful adults. Mm-hmm. And in order to have a society that will be putting people in space and going to Mars and figuring out cures to diseases and inventing amazing products, we have to be able to compete. And in order to do those things, yes, we need some out-of-the-box thinking, but we need to have someone who understands how education works. And I think that that is why across party lines, people have been very unhappy with DeVos, because even during questioning, she didn't understand some of the most basic education policy issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everybody wants, and our country deserves better. Deserves the best qualified candidate. And I think it hurts all of us in the long run.
So this is my last question, and a little bit vague, so go anywhere you want with it. But so why is public education so important?
Why is which education? I'm sorry.
My phone is on. Public education.
Public education is so important because it is that way that we can reach the American dream. My dad grew up in England, and when he was 11, he had to take a test that would decide the course of his life. Every kid in England at 11 took a test and decided whether they were going into academic type things, like a college track, or whether they were going to be carpenters or mechanics or something. He was 11.
Wow.
He did not pass the test. And so he took classes like basket weaving and carpentry, while his sister was in classes reading philosophy, and he would go and read her books. He had to get his high school education when he immigrated from England. He got it at night. He got it at night, and then he went to grad school, or he went to college, and then he went to grad school. I don't like schools that pigeonhole kids. I like the opportunity that we have in the United States, where if you work hard and do your best, you will be able to succeed. I know that there are a lot of stumbling blocks, but public education is that equalizer. It gives people a step up, a way to make things better than for the families and their families to come. And without that positive experience, without that that right, I don't think that we can have the other freedoms that we enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very important. If public education falls, if our system fails, we're going to lose our middle class. It'll just be a working class and an upper class. And I don't think that that's what the American dream is.
Yes. Well, wow, you are so eloquent, and like, thank you for taking the time to answer my questions and, you know, giving such passionate answers. I really appreciate it, especially because you don't even live in the state anymore.
Well, those are my kids. They're still my kids. And, I want a chance to advocate for them whenever possible. So, thank you for taking the interest, and I hope this helps out.
Yes, thank you. Thank you again. Wow. Well, I hope you have a wonderful night, and I will make sure to send you the article when it is done.
Thank you, Audrey. Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.